This week's episode of Boat Briefing is sponsored by Amico & Co., the full-service refit shipyard at the heart of the Med. With large yacht facilities, in-house departments, and berthing in its waterfront marina. To find out more, visit www.amicoshipyard.com. Hello everyone and welcome to this week's episode of Boat Briefing. My name is Stuart Campbell and here to help me navigate through all the news from the world of superyachting is our business editor Gabby Lazaridis.
Great to be back and well done.
Regular listeners will know I deeply offended Gabby some weeks ago when I completely mispronounced her surname after working with her for 2 years.
You're not alone.
I'm not alone. That's reassuring. Thank you. We're back in the office this week. We were both in Cannes last week with a good tribe from the boat office. I thought it was good. Great show. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I always enjoy Cannes. I'd actually say it's my favorite show if I didn't think it'd get me in trouble.
Wow.
So I'm not saying that.
It's on the record now. it was good. It was lovely to see everyone. It's the first show of the kind of crazy boat show season, isn't it? So everyone's in a chipper mood.
That just kind of progressively declines as we get further into the month.
That's right. By the end of Monaco, everyone's on their knees. But it's great. Some good boats. I enjoyed seeing Maverick, the new 44 meter Cantieri de la Marque. The owner is absolutely obsessed with Top Gun, hence the name of the boat.
I did see the posters all around the boat.
Yeah.
That was a good call out.
And he, one of the tenders is called Iceman.
Is it really?
Yeah. So all the tenders and toys are associated somehow with the film. And his oldest son also.
His son is named after the
after one of the characters in the show.
Is it Goose?
No, it's not Goose. But I thought the boat was amazing, actually. It's not on a platform that size, of a boat that size, you don't often see the level of customization that that owner had achieved with the boat. I thought it was really, really impressive and just designed so perfectly for him and his family.
Yeah, they kind of let us roam free right before a press conference. And I went and sat on this outdoor swing on one of the upper decks and just kind of hung out there with the view. I was too scared to go up to the top of the observation. It wasn't a deck, it was a platform.
Yeah, it's quite a steep climb up there, yeah.
Yeah, but there were a bunch of other great, cool features that were really customized to him and his family. The kids' room was quite impressive.
It was impressive.
So that was one of my favorites.
Yeah, I think a lot of the stuff I'm seeing on social media is suggesting that Maverick was kind of the universal favorite from the show.
I don't know. There's some others that we might get to.
Okay. Okay. Well, let's go a few other. I also had a look at the new the Rock 90 Beach Club from Evadne Yachts, designed by Vrijpak. And whenever I'm on one of these boats, I'm eternally amazed by how much volume they've squeezed out of quite a modest LOA and the amount of zones there are on that boat. The deck just makes no sense for a boat that size. It's huge. But great to spend some time with Ali from Evadne. Fox from Pendennis, the 35 meter Fox. It's nice to see her because the last time I saw her, she was bare metal down in Falmouth at Pendennis' shipyard. Lovely boat. I think they've done a great job. But we should mention, actually, whilst we're speaking of Pendennis, some interesting news just ahead of the show was that Pendennis had acquired a majority stake in fellow British Yard Cockwells. So it's this coming together of these two great Falmouth-based builders. Toby Allies, managing director over there at Pendennis, said Cockwells shares many of the values that are integral to the Pendennis group and serves many of the same customers and contacts, he explained. So it makes a lot of sense, lots of synergies. So massive congrats to both Pendennis and Cockwells.
Yeah, I remember frantically writing up that piece of news when it came in on the go. And the pair have actually collaborated on several projects in the past. So when it came time to look for someone to help it expand its business, Cockwells said that Pendennis was a natural fit for them. And actually, a fun fact that I didn't know about them, Cockwells created 4 custom tenders for Spain's largest yacht ever, the 112-meter Renaissance superyacht that will be in Monaco next week. And it was delivered recently, so they're doing really well by the sounds of it.
That is a good contract. 4 tenders for Renaissance. Good buy. Solid buy there from Pendennis. Well done, everyone involved in that deal. Had a look over the Advanced 80 over in Port Canto. Thought that was a nice boat. So Hull 1 in that series has done some really cool stuff. Full circumnavigation. It's about to launch another, so very capable platform. From Advanced Yachts, built in Italy. A lot of people were talking about the new Newmarine 30 XP Minella. I didn't actually have an opportunity to see her, but she'll also be at Monaco, so I'm going to go bother the Newmarine guys and have a look around. The Wider Cat 92 was pretty wild.
I didn't see that one.
It looked massive. I mean, it's not the longest boat in the world, but it carries, just got massive shoulders, that boat. It's, big unit. Big unit. A lot of space on board. And I think they've got 4 or something in build. 4 orders. Something like that. So quite an impressive.
All signed in can?
No, beforehand. But they seem to have found a groove with those boats. So it's great news for Wider. It's great to see the guys from Discovery Yachts. Faithful podcast listeners, they tell me. Although,
say that they don't listen.
They say it's terrible. We've never listened to it. But it was exciting to hear about their plans to kind of revive that great brand of sailing yachts. There are some new models on the way. That's really, really exciting, working with Rob Doyle and his team. So that was brilliant. And then we also had some World Superyacht Awards judges and Design Awards judges roaming around, scrutinizing boats, picking over them. And it's always interesting to hear their feedback as well, because they often see things I miss. But yeah, everyone was in good spirits, I think. I was freezing one day. Actually, I saw you that morning.
Oh, God, that day lives in my memory. I wore the complete wrong outfit that day. I did not expect it to be so windy. I went, you have to come downstairs to get into Port Canto. I don't know if I can say this on the podcast. At one point, my skirt came up by my head. I flushed the entirety of Port Canto. You didn't happen to bring my dignity back with you from Canto, did you?
Yeah, it was horrendous that morning. It was freezing.
It was really cold.
And queuing to get into Port Canto, the spray coming over the seawall.
Yep.
Then Gabby flashed half the boat show.
And then I looked great for the intro, for the morning welcome.
But quite apart from that, it did warm up later that day. So it did redeem itself that day at the boat show.
Very quickly after.
Yeah, so what were your highlights? Apart from, obviously...
That was such a highlight. That was such a high for me. My highlight from the week was actually, I went to a dinner with Sunseeker, which was really good fun. I somehow winded up at Andrea Ferbetti's table, so the CEO's table, so I felt extremely out of my depth. But he was actually really kind, and he came over to talk to me for a little bit.
You're the business editor of Boat International.
It's
of course, you should be on the top table.
It's still a big deal, but it wasn't lost on me. But they also had some really great performances from this dance group / acrobats. And
I saw some clips on social media. It looked pretty wild.
It was wild. That's definitely a word for it. And it was right on the beach as the sun was setting. So that really ended my week on a high note. But by way of boats, I did have Maverick down as my favorite. But other than that, I didn't really get to see many other boats. I was kind of running from one press conference to the next. Speaking of which, if you're interested in some business news that came from the conference... there actually was quite a bit of strategy news, financial news announced at this year's show.
And can I just interrupt really quickly? Katya told me the other day that the digital team published 18 pieces of content in a single day during the Cannes Yacht Show, which is just incredible.
A lot of that's down to our amazing, our news editor, Dea. She was writing things on the fly. I remember being in a press conference and she was sitting next to me and she was actually writing an article into our how would you describe Blaze?
Content management
system. as the news was being announced so that I could go out straight away and we could beat out all the other competition. So she did a really good job at that.
That's fantastic.
But yeah, so a lot of news from some of the world's biggest yards. Ferretti Group announced plans to release more than 25 new models between 2024 and 2026, which is quite impressive. It actually beats their earlier record from 21 to 23. They've already introduced 8 so far this year, including the new custom line Navetta 38, the Infinito 80 from Ferretti Yachts, and Pershing GTX 80, all of which debuted at the show last week. They also announced a new model, the Ferretti 940, which has sold three hulls already, and that will sit between the existing 860 and 1000 models. Some good news was that both Princess and Sunseeker announced they're headed for strong financial turnarounds. They were both kind of in a difficult period post-pandemic. Sunseeker is actually headed for record revenues this year, with the yard projected to reach £342 million at the end of this year. And Princess is reportedly on track to break even this year and even have a return to profit in 2025. A key to both their turnarounds, they said, has been raising the profit margins on their yachts, which they've been able to do by improving production efficiencies in-house, bringing more of their supply chain in-house. Princess also announced a new model, the X90, to fill the gap between the X95 Vista and the X80, and they've even sold a few off-plan already. So they're on a good track.
That's great news for those fantastic British yards. It's interesting, I've been talking to a few manufacturers, because you just assume, you look at the order book over the last few years and obviously it's exploded, and they say, yeah, well, it has exploded, but you know, costs have increased massively as well, so margins are still being squeezed. So just because you're building 30% more yachts doesn't necessarily mean you're raking in profits, because obviously the cost of materials has inflated considerably over the last few years.
That shipping delays, Princess's CEO Will Green was telling us that throughout this entire period, they've actually had an order book of over $1 billion.
Wow.
But again, they were waiting on parts, and some that interrupted their production schedule, so they were suffering that way. So they've been able to clear a lot of that up in the past year, and now they're solidly back on track. And but the most shocking number to me was from Azimut Benetti, who announced they're sitting on a massive 2.6 billion euro order book. And I guess that's really not that surprising, since they've led the global order book for nearly 25 years now. I think this year it'll be 25 years. And they don't typically release their figures to the public directly, so it was great to hear they're doing so well. They're aiming to reach 1.5 billion euros in revenue for next year, which would mean a 15% jump from 1.3 billion this year. So just good news all around, really, which is such a welcome change from where we were a year ago. And it's got me feeling even more optimistic heading into Monaco.
That is good news. That's a massive order book for Azimut Benetti, isn't it? 2.6 billion euro order book. Wow, that company.
Two brands.
Yeah, the company is a behemoth. Yeah, massive congrats to all those guys. I mean, they've just found massive success with certain. I mean, everyone knows, you know, obviously the Oasis Deck 40 and the B Now 50, and there's some models that have just sold beyond anyone's expectations, I think.
What's especially surprising is that, yes, they have a lot of success in the 30-40 meter range, but then they're actually making inroads in semi-custom production in the larger size segments, and those are really selling. The 60 meters, the 70 meters, which we've never really seen before, but those are flying off the shelves.
Yeah, they're doing something right over there in Livorno. But you mentioned Monaco Yacht Show, so we should probably dig into that a bit. So the boat stand is where it was last year, for those of you who remember and were there. We're at DS103. We have a happy hour in partnership with Sorensen on Thursday the 26th from 5 to 6:30 p.m. So Sorensen's a really exciting new yachtwear brand, and you'll actually see some of the boat staff sporting some new Sorensen threads at the show. Come along. So next Thursday, the 26th, from 5 to 6:30 p.m., come along for a beer or some rosé.
Wine.
Or wine.
Heaps better.
Yeah, at DS103. But Gabby, you've been all over the Monaco Yacht Show preview this year. So what can we look forward to?
Big news for this year's Monaco Yacht Show. They are setting a record, actually, for the biggest yacht ever to go on display in Port Hercule. Hercule? Hercule? Hercule?
Hercule.
Okay. I'm not going to attempt that.
No one's ever corrected me when I said that, so I'm just assuming it's right.
The title was previously held by Lursen's 115-meter Apo, which attended the show 2 years ago in 2022, but this year it's going to the 122-meter Kismet, another Lursen. I had a look on BoatPro this morning, and it seems she's already arrived in Monaco ahead of her official debut next week. Are you going to be on board that one?
I'm going to scurry on behind some World Super Yacht Awards judges, I think.
So you can get me on as well then.
Have a good look around.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are going to be trying to get on board. She's definitely one of the most talked about yachts this year. She's also the cover star of our October issue, looking fabulous. So for anyone not going to Monaco this year, there's a lot of great imagery in that mag for you to have a look inside at the interiors from Raymond Langdon, which look really elegant. They're actually quite beautiful.
Yeah, so Kismet is really exciting. I mean, I've overused it enough already, but it's such a good quote. I think in the piece in the magazine, it was referred to as a cathedral of design, and we've used that quote on the cover as well. But it's so true. The amount of finishes in the interior and the high level of spec in the interior is something to behold. So Raymond Langdon did a fantastic job on the inside, and obviously Nuvolari led it on the exterior.
And you said that you said before that it was quite a challenging build.
Yeah, just the interior spec would have made it very, very difficult. The amount of materials would have been a real challenge for the outfitters. But from everyone I've spoken to who have been on board, they tell me it's been done with the usual excellence you'd expect from Lursen. So very excited to have a look around.
Yeah, and I mean, not just that. I'm actually not sure what's happening this year. There's going to be two other 100-meter-plus yachts at this year's show, which is rather unheard of, I think. A lot of big boats. Typically, there's just maybe one.
Yeah.
We mentioned it before, but the 112-meter Renaissance will be there. She was delivered last year as the flagship of the Spanish yard Frere and the largest yacht ever built in Spain. Also, Ocean Co.'s 105-meter H3 confirmed her attendance in the last few weeks. She'll actually be the most expensive yacht for sale at the show. I imagine her resale value went up significantly after finishing a major rebuild this year. She was originally delivered as a 95-meter in 2000, but had her hull extended by more than 10 meters, so a lot of interest in seeing her new look in person.
Yeah, and it's not just a new look, I don't know what... I'm not what you'd call it, a glow up. That's what my kids would say. It's even more that, I mean, it's a profound change in exterior and interior styling. I mean, massive engineering changes too. I think they took out the engines. I think I remember that right from the feature. But you know, crazy kind of video walls inside, whole new spaces in the exterior. It looks radically different from the old Indian Empress.
It's quite the glow up.
It's quite the glow up. And Renaissance too. I mean, she's just going to block out the sun in Port Hercule. I mean, she is an absolute monster.
I'm really excited to see her. Seven decks?
Something like that, yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's going to be... And she's kind of, I think, where she is in the harbour. So there's where energy is at the moment on the kind of the Burgess... kind of hammerhead at the end there, and just across the water I think is going to be Renaissance on the other side, not Yacht Club side. So she's going to be kind of like, look like she's right in the middle of everything, so it'll look,
she's going to be on the opposite end, so
yeah,
good, because if she was at the hammerhead you wouldn't be able to see anything.
No,
her.
exactly.
So there's back to the show numbers though, there's also a lot of new product being showcased this year. BoatPro tells us there will be 27 yacht debuts next week, strictly for yachts above 24 meters, compared to only 17 in either of the previous 2 years. So some of the most high profile will surely be Delman Yachting's first 58-meter Sea Explorer, Pink Shadow, which, contrary to expectations, is actually a very deep shade of green, and I've always been very confused by that. But anyway, Royal Houseman will be bringing the 52-meter Special One, which is notable for being the world's largest sport fisher, and Rossinavi set to debut its first multi-hull project to date. the 42.8-meter hybrid electric catamaran Seawolf X. The yacht looks really impressive. It's got these really incredible sloping hulls on either side that kind of remind me of a massive bird.
So I think you say bird. I think Katja called it spider-like in a previous podcast.
Okay.
But bird's probably more elegant interpretation.
We'll put a poll up on Instagram's on Boat's Instagram, and people can side with me.
Bird or spider.
But yards are also getting really inventive with the design of multi-hulls lately, and this seems to sort of, it seems as a sort of follow-up to This Is It, which was, of course, the talk of the town at last year's show. But Seawolf X also has an onboard artificial intelligence system to help with its daily function that I'd actually love to see in action, so I'll be definitely looking to get a tour of that boat. But between all the massive yachts on display and new deliveries, this year's show is really shaping up to be one for the history books. There are so many firsts.
There are. I can answer the Pink Shadow question.
Oh, why is she green? Why is she called that?
Well, she's called Pink Shadow because she was, I think, originally conceived to be the support boat for a series for a sailing yacht called Pink Gin.
Oh.
So the owner had a series of Pink Gin sailing boats.
Oh. So he means Pink's shadow.
Yeah.
Oh, I get
it. So he carried the pink branding over into the motor yacht, but. There, that boat is a bit of a party platform. I've heard of some very fun nights on that boat. So, and its interior by Design Unlimited is rich and full of detail and very, very exciting, at least in the photos. So, again, that's another one I'm keen to poke around. And Seawolf X, of course, as well. God, that'd be really cool. I can't wait to see
just
that boat.
Just everyone.
Yeah, they're all good. And Special One. And Special One. Absolutely, yeah. It's a feast, isn't it?
There's a lot of really great boats to see at this year's show.
There are indeed. It's going to keep us very busy. So on to now a story which is being updated constantly by Holly Margerison on the digital team. So she's tracking this public hearing that's underway in the US into the Titan submersible disaster, which, as everyone will remember, imploded on its descent to the Titanic last year, instantly killing all five people on board. So in the coverage after the incident, it quickly became clear to everyone that OceanGate, the company that built and operated the Titan sub, was not remotely a responsible player in this sector. So many on the inside of the sub kind of market had known this for some time, of course, but the details just get more shocking as they come out. And actually, I interviewed Patrick Leahy from Triton Submersibles and Rob McCullum from EOS Expeditions after the incident last year. And they had both appealed to OceanGate's founder, Stockton Rush, to take more care and get proper certification for the sub, but their appeals very sadly fell on deaf ears. Patrick told me in that interview that the Titan sub was an experimental monstrosity that should never have carried people. McCullum, meanwhile, repeatedly warned Rush about the danger he was putting people in. And in fact, the last time that he saw him, he said he told him in no uncertain terms that he was doing the wrong thing. So it wasn't like he wasn't forewarned that the Titan submersible was a danger to its passengers. But Stockton Rush and OceanGate carried on regardless, and obviously with tragic consequences. And during the interview, I could really feel Patrick and Rob's anger because they both lost friends when the sub imploded. We'll put a link to that episode of the podcast in the description. And despite it being recorded, last year, it's still a great listen to hear from two very, very seasoned operators in this market. I'll post the link as well to the story we've got on the website so you can follow along for yourself. But yeah, so we're recording this on Tuesday, on day one of the hearing. So yesterday, former OceanGate employees Tony Nissen, Bonnie Carl and Tim Catterson all testified. Nissen explained there was 100% pressure to get Titan into the water. Meanwhile, Bonnie Carl testified that David Lockridge, the former OceanGate operations director, had deemed Titan as unsafe. So Lockridge himself will appear in court to give evidence on the 17th of September. Again, tragically, some of the last words communicated by the Titan submersible have been released to the hearing, and amongst them was All Good Here. And very shortly after that, of course, disaster struck. So the U.S. Coast Guard said about the hearing will examine all aspects of the loss of the Titan, including pre-accident historical events, regulatory compliance, crew member duties and qualifications, mechanical and structural systems, emergency response, and the submersible industry. It's all taking place in South Carolina at the Charleston County Council building, and the hearing is expected to last 2 weeks. But anyway, let's move on to some brokerage picks. I've been speaking quite a lot, so why don't you go? Why don't you go first, Gabby?
Okay.
I should add that these are picks from boats that will be at the Monaco Yacht Show.
Yes. Like we said, there's a bunch of good ones to pick from this year. The one that caught my attention was Sanam, 52.4 meters, all aluminium yacht. She was the final unit built at Palmer Johnson's U.S. facility, and they really decided to go out with a bang because this yacht is stunning. She was designed by Nuvolari Leonard, so I guess that makes sense, but there's something about her metallic exterior and sleek low profile that caught my eye, and I'm really excited to look for her in Monaco. She's only ever been used privately since she was commissioned, but she's got two pools, one on the sun deck and one on the aft deck. But on the sun deck, there's also a drop-down cinema in case you fancy having a movie night under the stars, gym equipment, and a bunch of sun pads. So a really gorgeous boat, asking 26.9 million euros, just a casual, with Worth Avenue Yachts.
Classic kind of Palmer Johnson look, this boat with Nuvolari Leonard. Lots of round windows and super, super sleek. Yeah, a bit of a weapon, that boat. Okay, I've gone sailing.
Okay.
I've gone for Rebelle. 32.6 meter carbon and titanium sailing yacht from Vitters, delivered in 2017. Really proven performer on the regatta circuit, Rebelle. She's got this kind of cool kind of waterfall of teak over the transom, kind of wraparound teak. Remy Tessier interior. And built by some dear friends of mine, Paola and Salvatore Trefiro, absolute legends of the beers. Everyone knows Paola. She's like the queen of superyacht. I think she wandered around the Monaco with her, you know, big bright hair, and everyone stops and talks to Paola. Salvatore is a great, you know, he loves to dance.
You'll have to introduce me this year. They're feeling a little out of the club.
The best couple. Salvatore is, I think, might be you think he's the fastest man over 90 in Italy. He competed in a sporting 100 meter sprint for over 90s, and I think he won it in Italy. Or if he didn't win it, he came second. I think he might have won it, actually. Anyway, superstars. Love those guys. But I wasn't always in their good books, because one time at the Laura Piana Regatta back in Porto Cervo, they kindly invited me to sail with them on Rebelle.
And she's got this. What did you do?
Kind of all glass coach roof. And as a pale, freckly man, I wear lots of sun cream whenever I see the sun.
Oh, no.
And I'd covered myself head to toe in sun cream, because obviously the Porto Cervo sun is quite powerful.
At that point, you just burn.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're probably right. But because I was wearing so much sun cream, and as we were tacking, obviously you run from rail to rail. So I had to decided to take shortcuts over the glass coach roof, and left streaks of sun cream all across this glass coach roof. And the crew, who the fuck is leaving? So I felt terrible, because I had left greasy sun cream streaks all over this beautiful boat. And so a belated apology.
As long as you didn't get it on the teak, everything's fine.
But they've forgiven me since. They shortly sold the boat. They sold the boat after that.
Yeah, so they would have had to.
So Rebelle is asking 16.5 million euros, and that is with Burgess. Just go easy on the sun cream in the tack, and you'll be fine. Right, news. First up, some big brokerage news, and that is 90.1 meter Phoenix 2 has been sold, with Rupert Nelson of Burgess representing the buyer, and joint central agents Burgess and Cecil Wright representing the seller. So built in steel and aluminium by Lursen and designed throughout by Winch Design, Phoenix 2 was delivered in 2010 and recently refitted in 2019. She was asking €124,950,000 with VAT paid. So I had a little look at BoatPro. I make that the biggest brokerage deal of the year so far in terms of value. The next one on the list is New Secret, the 74-metre Amels, which was sold in June with an asking price of €109 million. And after that was HBC, the 85.56-metre Aberking, that used to be known as B2. She also sold in June with an asking price of €79 million. So asking prices are asking prices, obviously, and they don't always reflect the total sales price, the eventual sales price rather. So I'll be digging around at the Monaco Yacht Show to figure out if anyone will tell me what Phoenix 2 actually did go for.
Well, going off of sale prices, if H3 sells at the Monaco Yacht Show, she'll be going for €295 million. So that'll become, I think, the biggest.
That'll be the biggest by some distance. Yeah, absolutely. So where are we? It's September. Yeah, so still a few months, isn't there? So massive congrats to all everyone involved in the Phoenix 2 deal. It must have felt good to get that one away. Next up, Gabs.
So at Cannes, we had Cantiere Delamarque reveal a new 31.1-meter Explorer series known as RAW, which they told us stands for Recreational All-Weather Watercraft. Kind of like a tongue twister. The first unit has already been sold with plans to diversify it into a full range. The new model has an exterior by Giorgio Cassetta, characterized by geometric lines and a bright orange overhang and boot stripe. Key numbers on this model include a 7-meter beam and a range of 4,500 nautical miles at 10 knots, with RAW billed as a powerful, honest, direct explorer by the yard. The project has several functional features benefiting its explorer DNA, including drone and helicopter landing capability, storage for up to 2 5-meter tenders in the bow, and the placement of the ventilation trunks outside to preserve indoor space.
I love the look of this boat. I stopped and admired when I saw the renderings of it on various big posters in Cannes. It's got a kind of classic Land Rover Defender kind of vibe about it. Real no-nonsense looking boat.
They actually did say that was their original inspiration, Land Rover Defender. So they originally came out with a green render.
Is that right? Well, they're working with some great inspiration there. Lots of really nifty features, like there's a cool bike store on the lower half deck and space for an ATV in the bow. Lots of range too for a 30-meter. Well, it's a snip over 30 meters. So 4,500 nautical miles for a 31.1-meter boat is seriously impressive. I want one.
You take that one. I will take Maverick.
Okay. We'll race around the world.
Okay.
Done. Meanwhile, there's a bit more no-nonsense stuff from Dutch Yard Dogger's Bank, which has unveiled two additions to its Explorer series, the 90 offshore and the series flagship, the 32-meter 105 offshore. So Northrop & Johnson has been appointed the exclusive European agent for the range. Exterior design of the Dogger's Bank series is by Vrijpak, who revived the brand early this year. The new models are characterized by sharpened fashion plates, larger glazing, and an inclined bow for a more muscular design. Joost Meertens, the sales director of Dogger's Bank, said, "We saw a need to launch larger models that can better accommodate modern-day technologies and give more usable space to guests and crew." It's great to see Dogger's Bank making waves. They've got it's a very proud history, this brand. The first ones were actually conceived by Vrijpak's founder, Dick Bowen, back in 1968. Barton Marnix, who now run Vrijpak, have brought the line back to life, a decision which is already paying dividends. They are great pocket explorers, a little like Raw. And this pocket explorer market just seems to be absolutely flying. So it's a good place and a good time to be marketing one. Alrighty, brief data section this week, because we've brought you quite a lot of boat and Monaco Yacht Show chat already.
And
so
it's
Gabby.
It's all Monaco themed. We covered a bit of the numbers for Monaco this year already, but there were some other trends I wanted to point to. So this year we'll have one of the highest numbers of super yachts we've seen in a while. One week out there are a confirmed 111 super yachts appearing in Port Hercule. So more than in either 2023 or 2022. Although
I thought Canadians were supposed to be bilingual.
It is French, isn't it? Oh man, that's taxpayer dollars wasted, isn't it? Although the average length has declined a little bit from last year, coming in at 47.3 meters, despite a sizable jump in the average volume, which rose to 716 GT compared with 632 GT last year. So quite a big jump. But what I found interesting was this shift towards the bigger size segments at this year's show. So there was an uptick in 70 meter plus yachts at this year's show compared to last year. So there's 9 this year versus 7 last year. Paired with a moderate decline in the 40 to 70 meter segment, which is usually one of the most active segments in Monaco, but this year there are going to be 65 yachts in that size range versus 69 at the previous show. I spoke to a couple brokers about it, and Moravia's head of sales, Adam Papadakis, said the spike in large yachts came as a surprise. Many thought they wouldn't sell after Russia's exit from the market, but it seems they've been selling like hotcakes. CEO of IYC, Raphael Salou, said something similar. He's found that 70 meter plus yachts have been selling relatively quickly if they are properly priced, which he believes is then incentivizing more opportunistic owners to put their yachts up for sale. Other than that, key figures point to 63 brokerage boats attending this year's show, and as per usual, a heavy tilt towards motor yachts, which will outnumber sailing yachts 103 to only 8.
Eight. That's not good, is it? Well, I suppose it, you know, 8 to 103 is roughly 10% of the number of boats at the show, so that kind of reflects the market. Although one of them will be Rebelle. The brokerage pick.
There are no wrong answers between our two brokerage picks.
That's right.
Or at least that's what I keep telling myself.
That's right. Well, thanks everyone for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of Boat Briefing. Thank you, Gabby.
Thanks for having me back.
You're very welcome. This week's episode was mixed and produced by the wonderful team of Adam Wilst, Adam Geist, and Naomi Wilson, and is a production. It's all going wrong at the end here.
We're still very tired from Cam.
And as a this is a disaster. And as a production of Boat International Media. Don't forget to like and subscribe. And we'll see you next time.
We got there in the end.
We got there. Thanks, Gabby.